We'll move on. The next agenda paper is agenda paper 5, which actually is just a very short series of PowerPoint slides. I appreciate that for several people around the room, they may not be directly impacted by the interim standards. So I'll keep this a short session. It may well finish earlier than the scheduled time. And that can make up more time for the discussion of the update on the main project. But I just wanted to give this opportunity just to keep everybody a pace of where the project is going as a whole. And if anybody thinks there are things coming out of the interim that we should be taking into consideration for the longer term project, it gives you that opportunity as well. So in terms of the interim proposals, the first couple of slides, this is background that I'm sure you're familiar with, but just to remind you that the rate regulated activities project has got two very distinct and separate components. There is the interim solution to fix a short term but quite urgent issue. The longer term project we're hoping is not going to be massively longer term. We're trying to push through this as quickly as we possibly can. But it really is, the two projects are quite distinct, and we mentioned this earlier today, the fact that the board have agreed to proceed with the interim standard doesn't mean that the board have already anticipated the outcome of the final project is that these things are going to be on balance sheet. So I don't want to labour too hard on that point, but we're still hearing muttering from different jurisdictions and different places where people are joining the two components together, and they really are completely separate components. The interim solution, hopefully you're familiar, proposal was to affect only those first time adopters that are recognising regulatory balances in their local GAAP, and therefore that would be their previous GAAP on adoption of IFRS. And the proposals primarily are to allow people to continue doing what they're currently doing with regulatory balances until we can sort out the main project, with the exception of the compromise we've talked about, which is the separate isolation of the disclosures to try and help with the comparability in the short term. Should have no impact on existing IFRS preparers, except those who Michael suggested might look at some of the disclosure requirements and think it might be a good idea to provide some additional information in those disclosure notes, but otherwise no real impact. No impact on cash flows either. It is literally just the reporting in the financial statement. We did get a very good response. We had 114 comment letters. Pascal's already commented that just over half of them came from Canada. Just to reiterate that the board, when it's looking at the number of comment letters, yes, we count how many comment letters we get, but it's not necessarily the volume of comments that we get that the board uses to do their deliberations with. It's the quality of the comments and the balance, because as the little table on slide number 8 indicates, there's a whole mixture here of individuals who send in a letter as an individual organisations, so a preparer, but also there are bodies of organisations as well. So you may have one letter, but it may represent 50 different organisations within that one letter. So it is very difficult to read too much into those numbers. But the board looked at the responses, went through their deliberations in the October board meeting, had a very early assessment in the September board meeting, but the more detailed analysis in October, and decided to retain most of the proposals that were in the exposure draft with some adjustments to those. And just very quickly on slides 9 and 10, the majority of these adjustments really are more in the way of clarifications rather than real substantive changes to the proposals. So, for example, there were a couple of scope criteria, as well as the scope criterion for being a first-time adopter. There were a couple of other criteria. One was that you had to have some sort of formal regulation or an external regulator in place. The second one was that there needed to be some cause and effect relationship between costs and the revenues that you were earning. Some of the letters, and there weren't a huge number of them, but the arguments used were reasonably persuasive, was to clarify that the first criterion, you did need some external regulation, and it wasn't sufficient just to self-regulate because you thought you were in a dominant position and that the government might try and step in if you are seen to be abusing your position in the market. So we're looking to add some clarification that it does need to be formal regulation, not just an internal management decision to self-regulate. The second criterion, which was the link between the costs and the revenue, the board has decided to delete that criterion because it did create a perception that we are prejudging the outcome of the main project and suggesting that there needs to be this cost and revenue back to a cost recovery or a cost of service type of regulation, which isn't the intention. The objective of the interim standard is to just maintain the status quo for those first-time adopters coming in without trying to put any additional restrictions, etc. on that. So that second criterion there, we're looking to delete that in the final version. I think the rest of them really are just adding application guidance and clarifications. So we have some questions about consistency of accounting policies between parent entity and different subsidiaries who have adopted IFRS at different times and whose policies take primacy in the consolidated financial statements. And I don't think you'd be surprised. The agreement was, well, it's the parent company that's preparing the consolidated financial statements. They're the reporting entity, so it's the accounting policies for that reporting entity that apply on a consistent basis across the group. So it's just adding some clarity to that point. Similarly, the business combinations, we mentioned this earlier. Again, the accounts have been prepared from the acquirer's perspective, so it's their accounting policies, but it would mean that we need to introduce a limited exception to IFRS 3 to allow those entities to continue their existing accounting policies for a business combination. And again, just to clarify here, the way the interim standard is working is any of these exceptions to other standards will be self-contained within the interim standard. We're not going to go into IFRS 3 and make the amendment there, because the only people it's relevant to are the people applying the interim standard. So we don't want to cause disruption for anybody else. So that's where that exception will be contained. Several people, we said explicitly entities would continue their existing policies for recognition, measurement and impairment. We didn't mention derecognition, so we're just going to clarify, continue your existing policies for derecognition as well. And on slide 10, again, just a clarification that a lot of the regulatory balances that are being recognised are timing differences between when items are recognised for financial reporting purposes, when they're recognised for regulatory purposes, and when an entity adopts IFRS and moves away from their existing GAAP, additional timing differences may arise because you're now applying different accounting policies under IFRS. And we're intending to clarify that those new timing differences can also be recognised, because that's not a change in accounting policy. Your existing policy is you're recognising those timing differences, you just happen to have some different timing differences. Also, we've just mentioned this one in the last session, which comes back to Richard's point about the pensions. The requirement for the long-term employee benefits and the pension benefits, some of the movements on those balances would go through other comprehensive income. The original proposal in the exposure draft was that the related regulatory balance movement would go through the profit or loss section. We acknowledged that that would create a mismatch, And so the board have tentatively agreed that we should split out those differences, so have two lines going through profit or loss and other comprehensive income to get a closer match. And then the last amendment is quite a fine detail point. Within the exposure draft, for the disclosures, we were trying to indicate the sort of factors to consider to make a decision as to how much detail is provided in the disclosure, bearing in mind that there's a lot of information being disclosed. Some people think that some of the disclosure is superfluous because it's too fine a detail, it's not that important, it's not hugely material. So one of the factors we highlighted was you need to consider materiality. If it's not material, don't be cluttering the financial statements. But we did have quite a few comments coming back to say, well, materiality is already included in the conceptual framework. It's already mentioned explicitly in IS1, but if it's not material, as mentioned in IS8, it would perhaps be confusing to mention it specifically here when it's not put in as a factor to consider in all of the other disclosure requirements of other standards. So, again, the board have agreed to just delete that factor. So it's a very simple change for me in terms of drafting. I just delete one word. But there's nothing sinister in the reason behind that deletion. It's just a clarity point. We're not saying disclose it even if it's not material. We're just saying we don't need to explicitly refer to materiality because it's already covered in other places.
Yeah. When we issued our comment letter on the interim standard, as a firm, we're wondering whether or not we should put a comment on the creation of new regulatory assets and liabilities. I don't have the wording of the interim in front of me, but it was written along the line that you're not allowed to create new regulatory assets and liabilities. Here, you have clarified that as a result of transition to IFRS, if you have different in accounting policies, that's fine. What it does not address, and we wanted to put that in our comment letter, and we were saying, well, is this a dumb comment or not? And the issue is the following. You have a balance account on transition, so okay, I'm allowed to recognize it. But I don't have a deferred account for a big storm, so I don't have anything. But the following year after I've adopted the IFRS, suddenly I have a big storm. We're saying, well, is that covered or not?
The comment addresses that.
Yeah, the intention there is the regulation builds in the fact that you can recognise that deferral account, and if you'd have had a big storm, you would have had that recognised already, but just because you happen to have got to the end of amortising your last set of storm costs, you're not changing your accounting policy. Your existing policy is that you recognise the regulatory balance, it just happens that that balance is zero at the moment, which I think is distinct from another question that was raised in some of the comment letters where you're not regulated at the moment but you acquire a business that is regulated, then can you? That's a different scenario because your existing policy is you don't recognise regulatory balances because you're not regulated. If you acquire something later on, that's a completely different scenario. Just before we move on to the sort of timelines, does anybody else have any comments or questions on this?
Sorry, Jane, one of the things we're worried about and when we're kind of projecting how this is actually going to work is taxes and how you get the deferred taxes for these segregated items, and back to the root of our topic, property, right? Because of book depreciation, maybe being a group depreciation method, it takes everything into factor and looks at a reserved asset ratio and comes up with a number. You got a tax depreciation, but if you start isolating, and you can compare an IFRS component once you calculate it to what the regulated book depreciation is going to be, and you can get a number down here. But in terms of how you come up with a deferred tax number to bring down with that, we're worried. Again, maybe when we peel it back and start putting pencils to paper, it'll the light bulb will go off, but we're worried on how we're actually going to advise companies to get that number calculated. But maybe it's not.
I don't know the answer. It's the honest answer there. But yeah, I mean, it obviously keep in touch and let us know whether it is practical or not, because the time to come, I'm not sure the best time to deal with that, but it's obviously something to try and nail down and let us know if it's a serious problem or... I guess it will differ depending on the tax regime in different locations and
right.
how it's
right.
accounted for as well.
Yes. I would like to point out that from my point of view, I understand the reasons. I understand the reasons of this interim project, but I think that the better solution would be to publish the final standard as soon as possible, because the application of this interim project in some cases will be a nightmare. They support, for example, in a country like in Spain, where individual, as you said this morning, individual financial statements, some companies are recognizing regulatory assets. Most of those companies, if they are listed in IFRS, they are not recognizing regulatory assets. And now, suppose that a company that is not listed is a first-time adopter. So we will have a Spanish company listed recognizing regulatory assets and another one not recognizing that regulatory asset. So that is actually impossible to understand.
Yeah.
And for investors, they say, what is happening with the financial information? So, and suppose that this new company is your subsidiary. For example, we have different business divisions, and we have the toll road division, and we decide, no, we are going now to leave this company. And then the Ferrovial, our company, will be listed and will not recognize regulatory assets, but our subsidiary that will be listed will be recognizing regulatory assets. It's being two Spanish companies, two European companies, so I think it's a nightmare. So probably a solution to say all the companies that in the past have been recognizing regulatory assets, recognize now regulatory assets, and then when we apply the new regulation, analyze if you have to recognize no regulatory assets. But at the end of the day, I think this is not useful for investors, because you have companies, depending in the time you decided to adopt IFRS, you are recognizing regulatory assets or not. So,
I mean, this is why we keep saying, and I keep banging on about this, but it's a short-term interim solution, because the board appreciates that it's not a viable long-term solution, because obviously the bulk of cases, first-time adopters will be in a jurisdiction, because generally a jurisdiction goes in one go. In existing IFRS jurisdictions, the bulk of the market is already there using IFRS and not recognising them. But you're absolutely right, there are some entities that are in the same jurisdiction but don't need to use IFRS because they're not listed and it's in Europe. Mainly it's the listed that are using IFRS, non-listed companies are using local GAAP. You may get a small number of those entities that are not listed that will become listed and switch to IFRS who are eligible to use the standard. It's one of the reasons why we built in the big compromise to try and get the comparability and the explanation of what the differences are, to try and give investors the chance of seeing what it would look like if you didn't apply the interim standard, because things are on so few lines, you can strip them out of those lines. But it's not an ideal scenario, and an interim solution is never an ideal scenario, and there's always got to be compromise somewhere. But that's the route the board has gone down. In terms of timing, if I just move on to slide 11, we're hoping to push ahead and get the interim standard finalised as quickly as possible. It obviously now the board has made their tentative decision at the October board meeting, which was right at the very end of October, to proceed with this project. We still have some due process steps to go through, so it's going to take a little while for the final version to come out, but we are keeping our fingers crossed for the fine winds and availability of resources to try and do that by the end of January, which is a very ambitious timetable, but we appreciate that the sooner we can get that done, the better it is for those jurisdictions likely to use it, which is Canada is a big one, and the deferral in Canada is due to expire
January 1st, 2015,
which means that if that deferral isn't pushed back any further, you're heading to your date of transition 1 January 2014. So it's important to do that quickly. The other, I think, more important message is that because of the difficulties of that interim standard, we really do need to focus on trying to contract with the main project, which is leading off very nicely. And you're very good at setting up the next session to move on to the next paper. Is really trying to make sure we keep on track with the main project. And one of the things I'd like to say there is coming back to something we said earlier. We started this project, and certainly from a personal point of view, I was looking at rate regulation thinking, I don't even know where to start, because it is such a massive, massive range of rate regulation. I don't even know where to go. I feel that we've made an awful lot of progress in a relatively short period of time, thanks in big part to the request for information and the responses to that request and the assistance that all of the commentators that on that request for information made and the help that you've given, to try and filter to get to a point where we're starting to identify some commonalities that we can perhaps focus on to move ourselves forward. And as I mentioned earlier, I'm not saying that we're restricting ourselves firmly to that, but it's just a case of that gives us the ability to move forward, clear our heads and try and identify a path forward, and then we can start thinking about whether to expand it back out again. But it really is a case of trying to keep that project manageable to allow us to achieve something in it. At which point, unless anybody on the phones or around the room has got any other comments on the interim standard, I'll move on to agenda paper 6.